Right on. Here goes.
One, two, three.
Welcome to the afternoon, Ann Arbor. You are listening to It's Hot in Here Radio on WCBN-FM, Ann Arbor. We are your co-hosts. This is Laura Smith Smitty and
Mrs. Kat Superfisky.
Awesome. On this show, it happens every other Monday, 12 to noon. It's the environmental news show.
12 to noon.
12
it's
to
the
1.
End of the semester.
Thank you. We're sleepy.
Noon, and we're done. Thanks so much for tuning in.
every other week we try to bring you interesting environmental news, we tell you what's in season, and we invite fabulous guests into the studio. Today we're talking about Detroit. We're talking about lessons in and from Detroit, especially in sort of trying to do sustainability in impoverished contexts. And to talk us through some of these interesting issues today, we've got Larissa Larson, Associate Professor of Urban Planning, with also an appointment in the School of Natural Resources, am I right? Welcome,
yes,
Larissa.
Thank you.
And also Chris Detchen, a recent UM grad, part of Next Energy in Detroit, who's, you're living and working there now. So also welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. So this is what we have on the docket today. So before we tell you what's in season, let's get into our first song.
Yeah, this one is going to be by Gladys Knight and the Pips. Since we're talking about Detroit, we thought that we'd pick out a lot of the good Detroit artists who, born and raised in the city and were influenced by it. Don't worry, I actually didn't put any Eminem on the playlist. You'll have to listen to that on your own time. But this one is, again, Gladys Knight and the Pips, and it's called I Heard It Through the Grapevine. Hello, Ann Arbor. Welcome to It's Hot in Here Radio. You're listening to us and some other great people in studio today. We're talking all about the D, Detroit, and kind of what's happening down there. And we're also going to talk about some other good stuff, like maybe what's in season.
Like what's in season, and this time we're not talking food.
Christmas trees.
That's right. According to the National Christmas Tree Association, approximately 30 million Christmas trees are sold in the U.S. every year. And 'tis the season. Michigan, as many of you may know, is actually one of the top Christmas tree producing states in the U.S.
So I actually didn't know that.
It's, you know, there's lots of trees up here. And at this time of year, they're getting cut down, thrown on the car, thrown in the back of the truck. I have yet to see one on the back of a bike.
It could be done.
But it could be done. And being taken into people's home. And this is, I mean, it's a really interesting environmental question, right? Important tradition for many of us. You know, the debate's always raging on whether you should get the plastic PVC made in China Christmas tree and then, you know, use it year after year or cut down your beautiful local, you know.
Has the Center for Sustainable Systems done a life cycle analysis of the China plastic tree yet?
I wonder if the one on campus has. There is, on Wikipedia, there actually are a couple LCA analyses cited.
Awesome. What if that was your master's work?
It easily could be.
I'd be like, yes, I study plastic fake trees.
Well, you know, no small question if 30 million trees are being chopped down a year.
We got to be answering these questions.
You know, some of the information is pretty interesting. I mean, if you think about it, planting trees is usually a pretty environmental good, right?
Yes.
You know, we're talking erosion control, absorption of CO2, all kinds of benefits. And then, you know, we cut them down and put them in our houses. There are trees you can buy, I've heard. I've never seen this, where you can actually replant them after you use them for the season.
So do they just dig up the root ball?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's got to be
heavy.
Have
you ever done this,
yes.
Larissa?
I've seen these. I've never purchased one because my husband always says, but the ground will be frozen. How will we plant it? You know,
you just can't put it in a giant pot or in your bathtub for the rest of the winter. No showers this year, honey. Sorry.
Redecorate it for Easter.
My New Year's resolution is to shower less and...
With a tree.
Yeah. With a tree. Shower with a tree.
Sustainability requires creativity, folks.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Redefine.
I mean, there's other great things I heard. Like, you know, you can sink it in a pond and make a fish house out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously they can be composted. So,
habitat, yes.
You know.
Wood chip it
at the end of the day.
Grow mushrooms on it.
Yeah, exactly.
A million options, so...
Yeah, Ann Arbor doesn't pick up the Christmas trees anymore, so there may be more habitat in our neighborhoods.
More creative solutions needed. So before we go on, I'm so curious what people in the studio are doing this year for your Christmas trees. Let's hear it.
Well, I go to a small trailer that is located usually across from Arborland Mall. I've had a relationship with this particular Christmas tree purveyor for several years, and I always receive a little note. It's, I think his business name is Flat Snoot. But the reason I go is a friend of mine, yes, who makes independent films, so you're already getting a sense of what this person looks for, said that this is a cultural experience to go into the trailer. And if you would like to buy, well, you can buy your tree, which is grown in northern Michigan and brought down, and then you can also have a drink of Christmas cheer with it as well. And your child can have a pencil, too.
Nice.
So it's kind of like a family experience, you know. Everybody gets something out of it, you know, and we go home all happy.
Adults sleep happy.
Is it a pencil made from the pine bark?
Well, you know, the pencil does look a little Chinese.
Oh.
So I don't know about the sourcing of the pencil, yes. But I think the Jägermeister is local. I'm not sure.
Yeah, nice.
I would have to look into that. But yes. But anyway.
I mean, the hangover is local.
Yes. That's the part of the life cycle there, I guess.
Welcome to the end of the semester, folks. We're all a little bit batty.
Yes. How about you, Chris? Tell us.
So I don't have a tree. No plans to get a tree.
All right.
This year, I think my place is a little too small and my roommates not so interested. And neither am I, frankly. But I do every year go with my folks who live in the Lansing area to select a family Christmas tree, which they put up in their house. And that's okay with me. It is something that my dad is very much attached to and something I'm not about to take away from him. So we go to a place in Bath Township in the Lansing area, and it's been amazing to just see how that landscape mm-hmm. has kind of changed since, you know, 7 years ago when we first started going to that particular place to buy our tree. There were a lot more trees there 7 years ago, I can tell you that much. But it's a little family-owned Christmas tree farm. I don't know if that's their only source of income, but they seem to do a pretty brisk business around the holidays. And it's interesting, you know, you can get your candy cane afterward and sip some hot cider. And talk to people there. And
it doesn't sound as fun as Larissa's source. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, no, no.
Sorry.
No. No Jägermeister, unfortunately.
You just got to take that and
you
in
bring
your pocket.
Your own. Yeah.
For the cider. Exactly.
Well, then, you know, so it sounds like you're making some pretty sustainable options here, you know, not having one at all, living in a small apartment.
Laura, are you getting a tree?
Okay, let me tell you, my roommate and I are going to draw one. We have a chalkboard wall in our dining room. We are going to draw a Christmas tree, and we're going to pin up popcorn strands on the wall.
Nice.
I think that's very nice.
That's our solution, you know.
Watch out for ants.
Oh, and cats. Batting at it. I can't wait for that.
That'll be a lot of fun.
So... Miss Kat, any plans before we move on?
You know, my parents went plastic a long time ago and crushed my childhood dreams. And this Christmas, I actually won't be around. I'll probably be in Nebraska in a dirty motel room. So I don't have any I don't have any plans for getting a tree. But I might have to look into that Jaeger and that pencil. That could be
take it with you.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, hopefully you won't be in that room. Getting the blues, like our next artist on the playlist.
Oh man,
here.
Della Reese. I hope that all of you guys already are familiar with Della Reese. If not, she is just a gem from Detroit, and here she is with her cut, I Got the Blues.
I got the blues, what shall I do? And it's on account of losing you. What will be? Don't you know? I know will be. I've got the blues. What shall I do? Tra la la la, tra la la la. Time's gonna come to love again. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Oh, but I don't know where. I sure don't know where. Hey, but some sweet day, the dark clouds are gonna roll away. I got the blues. What shall I do? La 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 la
Good afternoon, Ann Arbor. This is WCBN FM Ann Arbor. You are listening to It's Hot in Here Radio. Today we're talking with Chris Detchen and Professor Larissa Larson on the question of Detroit and what sustainability looks like in Detroit when we're in a pretty challenging context. So I want to start here with Larissa telling us a little bit about some of her research and teaching that she does in Detroit. I mean, you have a history of looking at environmental injustice and how that intersects with the built environment in your work. So when we go to look at a place like, say, Southwest Detroit, the Delray neighborhood, I mean, we're talking basically a hotbed for environmental injustice. Can you tell us a little bit about your work there?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Laura. You know it very well mm-hmm. because you were also quite involved with it. But I guess the reason I came to have interest in applying the idea of sustainability into pretty impoverished neighborhoods is that I teach a class, a graduate level class, and we study communities like Austin and Boulder, Colorado, and Berkeley, California, and Ann Arbor, and other, and in Chicago, and places like that where they are making demonstrable progress in how they're promoting sustainability. But I was on the other side of some of what I do, which is engagement with community members around environmental justice issues, is I wondered, how does it apply here? So thanks to you and some of your colleagues from mm-hmm. the fellows at the Graham Institute, we got together and wanted to look at, in Delray, what does it really mean for people? Does it have meaning? And so through the class that we developed, we were involved with helping the neighborhood consolidate information on what exists. They have a high degree of vacancy. Probably 70% of the land is now vacant. It's a residential interspersed with really heavy industrial manufacturing. And as you mentioned, the adjacent zip code is one of the most polluted in the state of Michigan. So a lot of issues there. And then when the issue of the bridge came along, that seemed like a chance to say, just a second, what's happening here? And what do the people of Delray want to have happen? And does the word sustainability have any meaning in a context when the bus doesn't come on a regular basis, when emergency services are unreliable, when people are really concerned with just making it through each and every day? So that was really sort of what I think launched us into thinking about, is it an appropriate way to talk about issues there?
Right. I mean, and to update our listeners, who many of you surely know that this bridge project in Detroit is a huge statewide, nationwide
yeah.
International question,
yes.
Right? You know, basically, you know, and Governor Snyder's way behind this, this desire to have a publicly owned bridge from Canada to Detroit, and this bridge would land in the Delray neighborhood, basically. So it brings up a lot of really interesting questions, right, in terms of sustainability and neighborhood development and progress.
Exactly. I don't know if everyone knows that the existing Ambassador Bridge, which was built in 1930, is privately owned by quite a character, Matty Maroon. And he would very much like to twin his bridge because, as many of you who have traveled over that bridge know, it's pretty congested. There's a lot of vehicle traffic, and it's the busiest crossing point between Canada and the United States. And so the idea of this second bridge, this would be a publicly owned bridge. And that's a really important differentiation from what Matty Maroon is doing. Now, as we all know, the state of Michigan doesn't have a lot of money right now. And the province of Ontario, who is a proponent for a publicly owned bridge, would like to lend the state the state's contribution of $550 million at no interest. So a lot of people want this, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But in the midst of this is a 693-acre area called Delray. And again, it hosts a lot of facilities that are quite polluting. And we're concerned that the people that are there get a fair shake out of what happens here. So over time, I mean, one of the neighborhood's biggest problem is air pollution. And yet, you know, so on the surface, you would say, well, why would you want this bridge to come there? It's going to increase air pollution from the diesel emissions of the potentially 14,000 trucks that are going to cross every day.
I mean, not to mention that it lands in the middle of the neighborhood,
right,
and
separates
socially
it.
Divides, you know, the residents that are living there in some sense.
Right. It'll claim 160 acres for the public plaza that will be needed to have the border crossing there. But I think the residents, who I've worked with for about 5 years now, would say that they feel that this is a chance for them to be actively engaged in a decision that could bring investment or reinvestment into their neighborhood. So they're concerned. They will support it as long as they get community benefits attached to it. And, you know, so that that there's first source hiring, their local residents are prioritized in hiring, that they get mitigation and again, investment in their neighborhood in Southwest Detroit. So
how much are the Delray residents actually being brought into the conversation?
It's a very interesting question. So the process began in about 2000, and MDOT is the technical lead of the process on this side of the border. They did establish a local advisory council that met on a monthly basis, but then there has been a group called the Community Benefits Coalition that is formed with the neighbors. So there's some multiple groups, and one of the challenges is building a coalition of groups from Detroit, Southwest Detroit, that really represents, you know, many voices for people so that they can kind of show the power of the grassroots kind of organization there. But were the people well brought in? The whole process of the environmental impact assessment or the impact statement process and then the record of decision, I would say it really sets up a very adversarial situation. It's not an inclusive process. You respond, but you don't contribute.
Right.
So I guess I would feel that, you know, we could make a lot of improvements in how they were.
So the plan is essentially already set?
The plan is, yeah. So it passed the record of decision, which is the review of the environmental impact statement. It was accepted in January of 2009. So it is there, but right now the legislature in Michigan has to make the decision about if they're going to move forward with it. And so, as Laura said, that it is kind of stalemated. Governor Snyder would like it, and I think we're going to see it come back in another way.
So these residents in Delray have been hearing for years and years that this bridge may or may not be coming, and I think this is a perfect segue to our next song, which is called Get Ready by Rare Earth.
They've been getting ready for a long time.
Right, Ann Arbor, get ready for some really interesting information, again, about Detroit. we really want to put in a shameless plug for a class that both Larissa and I are involved with. Larissa is the faculty lead for it. And it just so happens that today is the application deadline for undergraduates to get involved in this course. And my advice would be submit the application, decide later. This is a really amazing, unique opportunity to learn both in the classroom and on the ground in Detroit about some of these issues and sustainability that are just so complex and interesting.
So this class is a little different in that, as Laura said, we're in the winter semester, we meet one night a week for 8 weeks. But then right at the end of the semester, we move to Detroit and we live in the dormitories at Wayne State. And then we're actually in the community all day. And so we did this last year. And again, the site was Delray. It'll be our community site this coming year. Will probably be Southwest Detroit, but I don't know if it'll be exactly the same one because we'll have to see what's happening in the neighborhoods right at the time we're ready to go. But I think the immersion experience is really powerful.
And pretty unusual, right, to get in an Ann Arbor classroom experience.
Yeah, I think a lot of the students learned more from the residents than they ever could from me. And so I think just seeing the realities of how tough it is, what some of the pressing concerns were. I know we collected a lot of information from them about their experiences. And one of the things was just, how it was very real to people, how they saw power, oppression play out, and they saw people that were really not much different than themselves living in circumstances that were extremely challenging, and they really wondered, how had this come to be?
Right, and I think one big realization, too, is to get into these neighborhoods in Detroit, and I think we kid ourselves sometimes and think that people have options, and I think that being in Delray and working with the community residents, going through this bridge, this question of the bridge and the community benefits, you really get a sense that, the options actually are limited for getting out of this neighborhood, and so what are the options?
Exactly. Poverty is an anchor. And the choices are gone here for many of the people that live there. About half the people that live in Delray own their own homes, and the homes are valued at about $10,000 or less.
Wow.
So they cannot move easily. First of all, who's going to buy the house? Well, actually, somebody like Mr. Burns or Maddie Maroon might
AKA.
Buy them. But other than, there aren't a lot of choices. And then the other half are renters. And again, so this is one of the lowest cost housing options for people. And that's, that's why they're there. They're trapped there. And so, just the realization that choices are limited, don't exist for some. And then you see some elderly residents that have lived there all their lives, and they're not sure why things have changed the way they have, and they're really not prepared to live anywhere else because this is where they know and, they raise their families. So they're hard questions, and it really forefronts the social justice dimension of sustainability. Can we really ask people to say, no, don't have this bridge because we think this bridge is based on fossil fuels and truck traffic and it's unsustainable, if this is the only way they can make some slight progress in their own lives and have a chance for a better life?
I think that's absolutely great that you're offering a program, especially to undergrads, that is really targeting social sustainability, because that's, of the trifecta, that's usually the one that people forget about.
Or they understand the least,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It's like, that culture and that sociology stuff and whatever. And let's focus on the economy and the environment. And
we'll have
throw
a triple win. I wish there were win-win-win situations.
Exactly.
But too often there aren't, and mm-hmm. so we have to be kind of really aware of what the decisions, the implications are for the people.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen without some pretty deliberate actions from all sides. There is some talk of compensation for residents in Delray, is that
absolutely
correct?
So for the people that are within this 160 acre area of the plaza, they will receive 125% of their home value. Now, as I said, that's not very much money,
right?
And then some of the concerns are, if they go elsewhere, will they be able to afford the property taxes now with their mm-hmm. new home? But I think the really, for me, the bigger concern are not the people that will be displaced. They will leave. It's going to be the people right around, so they mm-hmm. don't take a very big swath around this plaza. And so you will be right next to this large concrete surface with all these diesel trucks waiting to go
through. Looking out from your living room, right?
Exactly. And really, it's those people that are going to be impacted the most, because there's no option on the table right now to help them. So that's a little frightening.
I know that one of the things the Southwest Detroit Community Benefits Coalition is calling for as a part of the package is better air quality monitoring around the bridge. And I think that inevitably a large bridge project like this is going to result in emissions and more emissions than there were before in that particular part of the city. But it's something I don't think that that kind of monitoring has really been going on at the level that it needs to happen. So
right, this is in some ways they were inspired by what happened around the Los Angeles airport. They had a community benefits agreement that said we want more close attention monitoring, mobile monitoring stations. We want higher levels of air filtration and checking in our schools. And so that has been part of the reason behind, you know, saying just a second here, we want to really know very clearly what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and in this area, it's really complicated, right? Because, I mean, what do we have? Zug Island, the Marathon Oil Refinery, the wastewater treatment plant.
Steel plant.
The list kind of goes on and on.
Exactly. So it's really always hard to say one thing is the cause of worsening air pollution. And this is right. A way that a lot of industries avoid responsibility too. And we have a situation where, yes, we monitor particular sites, but we don't do a very good job on the cumulative impacts. And that's what residents suffer from. So I'm not supposed to touch the table. Sorry.
Yeah.
it's a very challenging situation.
So let me just ask the tough question of, if you could have anything happen around this project to make it a project that you would feel comfortable implementing, what would that be? Would it be completely just scrapping it and say, let's keep it to the Ambassador Bridge? Would it be building the bridge but having more of a swath of kind of like a buffer zone without residential neighborhoods around the entry point? Or what is the best case scenario in your eyes?
That's really tough, Kat, because you're asking me and I don't live there. So I like your last option of having an area where we have a larger buffer. And what I'd like to see is eventually people transition, no more homes to be built there, and people, as they desire to leave, are given, you know, the option to sell out, and then the land would be reverted just for industrial.
Mm-hmm.
But because I do respect that some people at this point want to stay there. And so that's a hard thing for me internally, because I worry about their well-being just from breathing in when I go to visit there, and yet I respect the decision to stay. So just trying to strike that balance, and I think this is a question that can be applied to other parts of the city of Detroit, is, you know, can we maintain 139 square miles with a population that is just over, you know, 730,000 people, and provide decent service for people? And service, I mean, like emergency services or public utilities, streetlights, things like that. Increasingly, I think the answer is no. So, you know, how do we scale back in a way that still meets people's basic needs?
So I'm going to put another shameless plug in for this class. I mean, because basically these are the kinds of conversations that we're having with undergraduate students who maybe, you know, I think we all have a tendency to want to look at sustainability in crisp, clean categories. And you look at, when you get into a context like this one in Detroit, and specifically Delray, it makes a really interesting a confluence of factors that don't have easy answers.
And what a great hands-on experience too, especially in those kind of formative years, to be able to actually get down in a city like Detroit and see this stuff not in textbooks and not on PowerPoint slides, but actually go and, you know, talk to the people who are living it day to day. Now, are there certain types of students that you're looking to attract to the class? Are there certain students that you're normally drawing from, you know, certain departments and things like that? Or are you really just looking for anyone who's interested in everyone?
We like diversity.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you that last year we had many who were Graham student scholars.
Yeah.
And then also we had a number of program in the environment students.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think we benefit from having different perspectives. So I think we look to try and mix it up a bit. Yeah. And so so I guess I'd say, please think about it.
Basically, anyone who's interested in environmental justice in Detroit, the built environment, because mm-hmm. a lot of what we talk about is, you know, how the built environment affects issues that are of importance. So, mm-hmm. you know.
And if there are students out there listening, I have actually talked to students who took this class and they loved it.
Oh, so, thank you. You didn't have to say that, Kat.
So that, aside from the shameless
glowing
plug,
reviews.
It's, you know, it's actually glowing reviews as well.
So the course is Environ 302 or Urban Planning 403. You can also keyword search it through the Graham Institute, and the application is through the Graham Institute website. So it probably would only take 20 minutes to fill that out today.
Or less.
Or less, perhaps. So we would really love, if you're interested in these topics, we would love to have you next semester.
And one of the challenges of sustainability, as everybody knows from their very first discussion of it, is what is it? Mm-hmm. And so in the context of our class, actually, we look at around three issues. We look at food, the built environment, and transportation. So because it could be an endless list, as everyone knows, mm-hmm. sort of thing.
Well, here's my segue try here. Laura's had some good ones. Don't be a fool. Sign up for the class.
That's
Let's
right.
listen to Aretha Franklin, Chain of Fools.
That was okay.
Yeah, I know. I'm working on it.
Chain, chain, chain. Chain, chain, chain.
Right, Ann Arbor, you're listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. This is It's Hot in Here Radio. We have fabulous guests with us talking this hour about Detroit and some of the sustainability questions that sit there. And so our other guest in the studio today, Chris Detchen, a recent UM grad. He's also a manager of policy programs at Next Energy in Detroit. So Chris, tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, thanks a lot for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here. Next Energy is a nonprofit organization that was founded in 2002 with major support from the state of Michigan to accelerate the development and use of clean energy technologies statewide. And so, you know, historically, we've focused a lot on new vehicle technologies, on things like transitioning companies that were previously involved in automotive manufacturing, in some cases to things like wind manufacturing, or making components for wind turbines and other renewable energy systems, solar as well. And, you know, there's been a pretty strong sort of set of successes that have happened as a result of that work. You know, you've seen quite a few companies actually make that transition. You're seeing sort of Michigan emerge as the global center of gravity for the electric vehicle industry. So there's been some pretty positive impacts, I think, as a result of the work that Next Energy has been engaged in collaboration with a whole host of other different partners. you know, more recently, I think Next Energy has started to really engage in a more serious way with the city of Detroit and the kind of the city that we're based in. We are based in Midtown Detroit, just north of Wayne State University. And the project that I've been working on for more than a year now is something called the Green Economy and Sustainable City Initiative, which we've been able to undertake with support from the Kresge Foundation and in partnership with the Clean Energy Coalition, which is actually based right here in Ann Arbor. The focus of that really has been to try to work as extra boots on the ground for and with the city of Detroit to help identify those kind of leverage points where you're able to not only improve the sustainability of or the sort of the environmental sustainability of the city's operations, but also really bring down the cost of operation and try and drive some fiscal savings into the equation as well, because as we all know, that's of critical importance right now in the city of Detroit with the budget crisis that the city faces and sort of the pending or soon to begin, I guess I should say, financial review of the city and so forth by the state. So, we're trying to do things in a couple of different arenas. We have a team that is focusing on identifying opportunities, savings opportunities in the city's buildings. And so the idea there is to really help the city do a better job of tracking its energy expenditures.
Are we talking residential, commercial?
We're really talking public buildings that are owned by the city of Detroit.
No small fleet of built structures.
About 450. Part of the challenge is just to identify exactly which buildings are owned by the city of Detroit, and actually that, you know, sort of building out that that basic level of information has been part of the service that we're providing, but much more importantly, I think it's about figuring out what kind of energy expenditures are we seeing in these buildings. The city, just for a number of different reasons, doesn't have as much administrative capacity as it needs to really dig into these bills that they're paying every month. And so we're trying to help them do that and help them figure out where they can prioritize some investments in energy efficiency, or where they can prioritize selling off assets, if need be. There's a lot of underutilized space that probably doesn't need to be on the city's books, to really help them, save as much money as they possibly can.
So, I have a framing question, because it sounds like a lot of what you do is supported by foundations, right? And that's some of the capital that's coming in to make your work possible. When you frame it to places like the Kresge, are we saying we're is this a climate question? Is this a money-saving question? How are you sensing that the motivations behind people's desire to reduce energy usage or make efficiencies in Detroit?
Well, I think the motivations are many, definitely, and we need to take a pretty holistic definition of sustainability in order to be able to get this work done, in order to be able to get it done effectively. I think that, clearly there are big climate benefits to the work that we're doing. The city is spending, I won't say how much, but a whole lot of money on energy, and that means they're using a whole lot of energy that is produced very much predominantly by coal-fired power plants. And so the more that we can do there to bring that number down, the more we're both improving sort of the city's emissions profile and helping the city to get into a more sustainable state financially. And there's a huge need to do both of those things. We have staff working on other projects as well. Sorry, I just pounded the table there.
You guys,
we're very passionate.
There are staff working with the Detroit Public Works Department to help sort of strategize about a more effective rollout of curbside recycling pilots, and some talk of sort of optimizing waste trucks that are doing waste collection. And we've actually been able to secure a small grant to help put together a study on that, so that the dump trucks that drive around the city can do so in a way that makes a little more sense and doesn't consume as much fuel. So there's a big focus of work on sort of on the waste side of the equation. On the vehicle fleet side of the equation, there's a lot of work going on to help the city, identify some technologies that they might be able to make use of that can really help their vehicle fleet become more fuel efficient. Some very simple things like helping the city start to get paid for used oil. There are companies out there that'll buy used oil and re-refine it and resell it. And, if you're a large department like the General Services Department in the City of Detroit, which maintains all these vehicles, or the Detroit Water and Sewage Department, which has a huge fleet, you're going through a lot of oil, and you've got a lot of you've got a lot of oil that you could sell back potentially, and so some of it's very much kind of nuts and bolts, but I think there's a lot of other work going on around the City of Detroit that is more focused, I think on really connecting directly with the residents of the city. And I mean, I have to be completely honest, I think the work that we're doing is so much more focused on sort of this client of ours, which is the city of Detroit. Mm-hmm. I can't say that we are as directly connected to the residents of the city of Detroit as a lot of other organizations are, but we try to partner wherever we possibly can with organizations like Detroiters Working for Environmental Justice, Warm Training Center, Southwest Detroit Community Benefits Coalition. I'm going to be going on a tour of Del Rey tomorrow that the Southwest Detroit Community Benefits Coalition is putting on. And you can learn more about that coalition if you'd like at delraybc.org. So DelrayBC.org.
That's good, because they had an effective slogan to get legislators down there, and they said, visit before you vote. And I think anybody that visits has a new appreciation for the issues there.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a fascinating place, Del Rey, and I think that it is important to see it with your own eyes and to try to talk to people there as you form your sort of own opinions about what needs to happen with this project.
Chris, can I ask you a question?
The sure.
City of Detroit is a little different than some cities in the United States in that it has a private utility. It does not have a public utility. And lately I've been talking to some other cities, Cleveland and some other places, learning about what their practices are about energy. And this dilemma of, is it better to have a public utility or a private utility, is a very interesting one. So there's pros and cons. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on, what are some of these pros and cons, and how does this affect some of your work with the city, having a private utility?
Sure, sure. Well, historically, Detroit actually has had a public utility. The Detroit Public Lighting Department is responsible for maintaining and it owns all of the city's street lights, but is responsible for maintaining slightly less than half of them and actually powering half of them. There's a fairly complex relationship there between the Public Lighting Department and DTE Energy, which is the private utility that you mentioned. The Public Lighting Department for many years has actually generated its own electricity at a natural gas-fired power plant on the Detroit River, very close actually to the site of the proposed bridge ramps that we're talking about with the new international trade crossing. The city is no longer operating the Mysterski power plant, which is this natural gas-fired power plant, and is instead actually passing electricity from DTE through its substations into the electrical infrastructure, the transmission distribution infrastructure that powers the lights and actually services a small number of commercial and residential customers too. I think in the long term, a lot of people don't see that as a very sustainable strategy. They think that you're better off kind of more clearly defining the roles of the public utility, maybe it becomes very strictly a department that's focused on providing for streetlights. Maybe even that role is no longer there for the public utility, and in which case sort of those responsibilities as well go over to presumably a private utility like DTE. But there are a lot of issues with that kind of arrangement that other cities have dealt with. I mean, the city of Highland Park just north, well, within the city of Detroit, one of the two cities within the city of Detroit, the other being Hamtramck. City of Highland Park, you know, has streetlights that are owned and maintained and powered by DTE Energy, and they've fallen on hard times financially and have not been in a position to pay their bills. And as a result, lights are being turned off and pulled out of Highland Park. And, you know, from a quality of life standpoint,
very safe.
Yeah, super safe. Super safe. But what, you know, I guess for us, and we are working on this challenge, this problem. One of our questions is sort of how would you really prioritize? You need to be, you know, need to have a strong and well lit, you know, set of infrastructure, and how do you provide for that? How do you make sure that, you know, the areas of Detroit that absolutely need hardwired lights have those, and then maybe in other places, maybe you begin to move over toward off-grid lights, solar and wind-powered lights. And we actually have helped to secure a small grant in partnership with the Public Lighting Department to test some of those technologies out in different parts of the city. So,
well, I mean, in the way things are headed in terms of Del Rey, I think it's one of those neighborhoods. Everyone's worried that the lights will just get shut off and they'll be living in the glow of a bridge plaza, maybe. But, you know, darkness everywhere around.
Yeah, they already have a lot of problems with illegal dumping and things like that. So I think they don't want to get it any darker.
Seems like all these problems are something that could use a resolution. Yeah, so maybe... maybe we could go to
our next song.
Maybe we could get the engineer's attention and listen to this. Is Aaliyah, who is an amazing Detroiter, and she's got a song called "We Need a Resolution."
What's the latest? Speak your heart, don't bite your tongue. Don't get it twisted, don't misuse it. What's your problem? Let's resolve. We can solve. What's the cause? It's official. You got issues, I got issues. But I know I miss you. Yeah. Who should be hurt? Who should be blamed? Should be shamed.
Am I supposed to change? Are you supposed to change?
Who should be hurt? Will we remain? Oh,
we need a resolution. We need a resolution. We need a resolution. We have so much confusion now. Where were you last night?
Fell asleep on the couch. I thought we were going out.
I wanna know why your fingers broke.
If you had let me know, I wouldn't have put on my clothes. In the bed,
I wanna know what was in your head.
Or what was in my head? Am I supposed to change?
Am I supposed to change? Are you supposed to change?
Who should be hurt? Who should be blamed?
Am I supposed to change? Are you supposed to change?
Who should be hurt? Who should be ashamed?
Am I supposed to change? Are you supposed to change?
Who should be hurt? And will we remain? Should be heard and who should be blamed?
Give me bits and pieces. you trying to blame me when I don't even know the reason? I think it's just the season. Maybe the month, maybe you're feeling. Now tell me what's the reason. Snoop video looks like it's even. So cut the crying, cut the coughing, cut the wheezing, girl. Cut the blaming, cut the naming, cut the sneaking, girl. I think you need some prayer, better call a deacon, girl. So get your act right or else we won't be speaking, girl. So what's it gonna be? Me and you? Or is it gonna be who blames who? I'm tired of these things, I'm tired of these scars. I think I'm gonna get me a drink, I'll call you tomorrow.
Oh man, R.I.P. Aaliyah. I always get confused as to whether it was Aaliyah that passed on or whether it was Ashanti. But the folks in studio here are very well educated on their hip hop and R&B trivia, so were able to let me know that it was actually Aaliyah that took too many shoes on the flight back from, where was she, Costa Rica or something like that, and exceeded the limit of the weight on the, anyway, not important. I just want to throw a shout out to Aaliyah and get some of that. R.I.P. Aaliyah.
All right. Well, we're wrapping up our show here with Professor Larissa Larson from the College of Urban and Regional Planning and Chris Detchen from Next Energy in Detroit. We've been talking a lot this hour about some of the most dire context in the city of Detroit and what people are going through and how this question of sustainability works into that landscape. So, I guess I'm curious, and I know, Larissa, you brought up earlier how this isn't Boulder, this isn't Austin, but it's Detroit, and sustainability looks different. And I'm curious to hear from each of you how, in your minds, it looks different in Detroit.
Well, I know from my perspective, I mean, the city, it's an unusual situation that they have, and it does provide them some opportunities. So you see some ground roots or grassroots initiatives there that you wouldn't see in a lot of other places. The challenge is finding partners. Often the city's unable at this time to really help out a lot, facilitate. So groups like Next Energy and others are really important in helping. The nonprofit community organizations there are critical. But so what do you see there? Well, you see people really, you know, taking inventory of what they can control, what they have the ability to influence. And so I always say you don't come to Detroit to study good governance. You come to see grassroots change. And so I think you do see in some of the urban food movement and some of the other things happening in the city that people really are trying to kind of take a hold of their lives, pull it back and say, what can we do to make it better? So I think that's a way sustainability. So again, the social justice component is just right out there in front to me, honestly, in seeing it in this kind of a context.
And hats off to you for, again, bringing it more to the forefront of other people's minds, too, through the class and through just, you know, your work and things like that. Because, again, I just find it so it's disconcerting to me that is often the main component that is missing from people's perspective on sustainability. So great work with that. I wish you a lot of luck with the class coming up and, you know, with all your work in the future, too.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really excellent that the Graham Institute's doing this.
So, Chris, I'm curious from your point of view. I mean, you're a recent grad. You know, you moved from Ann Arbor to Detroit, right? And you took this job working, and you're working more on the city level with some of these issues. I mean, did your classroom knowledge on, you know, from Pite prepare you to you know, study, to actually implement sustainability in Detroit?
Well,